Yes. And now I would like to speak further about how things were in the city of Frankfurt when you were a teenager, right? In the year, well, what would you say?
In my last 2 years at school, which would have been approximately 1928-29, the Nazi movement started to make a great deal of inroads on the younger people. And I was subjected to a lot of discussion in school about my background, background of my family, background of Jewish people in general. And the discussions were often quite unpleasant, mainly because as time went on, the fellow students who were in the class with me, fewer and fewer would be on my side and help me, and more would start to attack me with the idea of superiority of the German race. There was a great deal of arrogance. It came to the point where some of the men in my class would not talk to me anymore, would refuse to have any kind of social gathering where I was present.
What about your teachers? How did they respond to you?
I would say that there were a few teachers, and I'm thinking particularly of one who I was very fond of, who had a very liberal background, very liberal convictions, who tried to mediate these situations, tried to help me a great deal. There were one or two teachers, which, especially as far as political science or were concerned, who gave me a hard time. It's interesting, looking at it from hindsight, how quickly the philosophy that the Nazi movement was propagating took root, especially with young people. At the end of my school year, which was approximately 1930, there was only one man out of approximately 20 who would continue to be willing to spend some time with me. And peculiar, he was the only man who came from a working man's background. Later on, after we left school, he would meet me at times, but it was always done in sort of a very secretive kind of a way. We would meet in a park, never in a restaurant where we would be seen. We would meet usually in the evening. The other boys had cut me out almost completely.
I hate to interrupt you, but to clarify it, this didn't suddenly happen. Can you remember how it slowly took place and what instigated the whole feeling amongst your friends?
Well, the thing that instigated it was the philosophy that was being talked about and preached
by
in the society.
Not from a leader, You mean it just swept?
Oh, from leaders in the community.
Really?
The thing I wanted to make clear, it was not, it did not come from the churches.
I see.
I'm sure that some of the churches preached this also, but the churches were not the leading factor in bringing this whole movement to the foreground. It was really a political and social and community movement. And it brings something which I really would like to bring across particularly. There was, I believe, a latent anti-Semitism in German people at all times. And what the Nazis did was mainly awaken it and bring it into full flower. And I believe that this latent anti-Semitism was taught in Germany for so many generations that even in modern times, and I mean today, I think a repeat of what happened in 1933 could very easily occur in Germany. Germany is, from that point of view, entirely different than the pluralistic society that we are accustomed to in the United States, where there are so many different nationalities that have lived together for generations. I don't mean there's no prejudice in this country, but the prejudice is turned toward, by many people, toward many people. It is not concentrated. In Germany, the feeling of the superiority of Germans and the inferiority of Jews is an idea, it's a thought that has been in the German people for centuries. And it might be less today than it was in 1925, but I think there will have to be many more generations before this feeling will disappear completely, if it ever will.
I hate to ask you this again, but try to clarify, was there any special thing that started this propaganda or whatever? Was it done by radio? What communication was used in the early years that we know nothing about?
Well, there were... You've read, and we've read, all of us have read, about the meetings that Hitler and the people who formed the Nazi Party in Munich started around 1923, 1924, where these groups formed societies or clubs or cliques in all cities. They had meetings, they had lectures, they had rallies.
And was this happening in Frankfurt?
That you witnessed it? Every city, large and small.
So that your friends were going to these meetings?
Friends were going to the meetings. And it also came out in schools. I mean, this was no, there was nothing that was hidden underneath any kind of cover.
That's what I wanted to clear.
Were your parents and your uncle beginning to be affected? Their businesses, their relationships with friends?
Their relationship with in their business was affected very definitely. As a matter of fact, in the maybe 1932, as a matter of fact, my father's business, in leather goods business, was discontinued around 1930. The business I worked in for 2 years became smaller and smaller, very noticeably so. My uncle's import business was affected also by shrinking volume. As far as social life is concerned, I really don't know. I'm sure they were affected just the same way as I was, but their social life was mainly with Jewish people too. Not very, in Frankfurt, I don't remember any friends that my parents and my uncle and aunt had that was not non-Jewish.
But how did the community, for example, compared to Pittsburgh, like we have Squirrel Hill, which is so Jewish motivated. I mean, it's a whole community of Jews. Did they have anything like that in Frankfurt?
Well, first of all, Squirrel Hill is not really a Jewish community.
I agree.
I heard a figure not so long ago, which makes it very clear that the percentage of Jews is less than 50% in Squirrel Hill, too. So that is a community which is not really Jewish-dominated. There's still a great many non-Jewish people living in.
Right. I only use it as an example.
The same thing happened in Frankfurt. We didn't
live
in that kind of community.
Did you have a Jewish business section? Nothing like that?
No, there was no Jewish business section.
I wonder, perhaps what we're getting at here, Harold, is was there any concerted effort on the part of the Jewish community to do anything to protect themselves?
I don't think so. I don't know of any. I imagine there was some activity, but I was not part of it and I didn't know about it.
So the reason I brought it out, by comparing it to Pittsburgh, where we have a Jewish business district in Squirrel Hill, which would have been immediately affected were it in Germany, I was trying to see the comparison to Jewish business life in Frankfurt.
Well, Jewish businesses, as soon as, I would say, around 1931, 32, 33, Jewish businesses were marked with a large J or with a Star of David, so that non-Jewish people or Jewish people knew that this was a Jewish establishment. In the same way as you remember that in, I think it was in Denmark, and later on in Germany too, Jews had to wear armbands with a yellow star on it. The strange thing was,
yes.
Go ahead, to answer your
question. The point I don't want to lose is to find out something that we could never do before except listen to you. How did this take place slowly? Because it evidently did develop slowly, or didn't it develop slowly?
Just think about the rally that was held here. I think it was last spring when Farrakhan came here.
Right.
There was a rally for people to come to listen to him. There was a rally that was brought up to try to oppose his coming and his speaking here. Well, these type of rallies were organized by political organizers all over Germany. This same way as there are political rallies here during election, for example. There were rallies constantly in Germany. And men and women joined the party and became very active. They marched for the party. They wore uniforms. And you know, the Germans are a very structured kind of people. They enjoy the type of joining the type of organizations that politicians organize. And the Nazi movement was a very strong and very effective political movement, had a very strong and effective political organization.
What we haven't done is compare it to the type of government that was going on, that preceded it, and how it was slowly changing. What was the type of government?
The type of government, the Weimar Republic, was a democratic republic. It was very, the republic itself could be very easily compared to, maybe not so much to ours, but the English democratic system. Mm-hmm. But it was fully democratic. The thing that I would stress particularly is that it is very difficult to run a parallel between American society and German societies, because in Germany, in England, in France, there are Germans, and the vast majority are Germans and have German roots, have German parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, or French parents and French families who've lived there for centuries. In this country, this is not a fact. This is a pluralistic society. And there's a tremendous difference between a pluralistic society and a national society. We have the advantage here of having different nationalities that were blended into a new American society. There is nobody who can say here, my family lived here in 1500 or in 1200. Doesn't exist.
Perhaps we can get a sense of how things were changing as the Nazis took over by your telling us about how your own life was changing.
Well, yes. let me say this. My life didn't change a great deal at the beginning at all. I was working in a Jewish retail establishment, furniture store. I was very friendly with the owner's son. I remained friendly with him after he came over here. I had no difficulties in that firm at all. Also, there were men and women there who made snide remarks every once in a while.
Customers but or employees?
I'm talking about employees right now. The change in my life was that I did not meet anyone anymore who was not Jewish outside of, in the outside. My friends or people who used to be my friends never had anything to do with me anymore. I would walk on streets and I would see these organizations marching down the street or holding rallies. I was never attacked by them. And I want to make a statement which is surely not to my credit, but until Hitler came into power, I was of the strong belief that he would never get into power. And after he became head of the state, I was positive that he couldn't last. And only after he lasted through the second winter was I convinced that this was a situation that was to stay. And only then did I make arrangements for my family and me to leave Germany and come over here.
Well, that feeling you had, naturally, you were Jewish, and that was supported by that. But did you notice anyone else, any German friend that may not have gone along with those Hitler's politics? Was that possible?
I did not have any.
It wasn't.
If it was possible, I'm sure there were Germans who did not go along with this, but they sure didn't come to the surface. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any.
So there wasn't, you didn't see a resistance, in other words, in your town, to this movement?
There was no resistance.
There just was none. Mm-hmm. It's hard.
It's hard for you to realize.
To understand it, because it's very here hard. We have opposition, no matter what it is. And there you say, along came a new party, and yet they didn't have to really go out and fight to turn people in their favor.
They did a very good job propagandizing their ideas and their philosophies. They did an excellent job. But again, remember that Germans basically are very, very arrogant about their cultural, historical background. Mm-hmm. So what these people were building on was fundamentally there already, only they brought it into full flower.
Can you tell us now about how you began to make arrangements to leave and about leaving Germany and feelings you had?
The only thing that I really had to do is I didn't do it, my parents did it, my mother did it, wrote to her sister here in this country to furnish an affidavit, which was accomplished within, I would say, 3 months. And after we had that, we could apply for immigration papers at the American consulate, which took a few weeks too. I would say we started this whole proceedings in March, and we left in August.
What year?
1934. Yeah. Hitler came to power January 31st, 1933. And after the winter of 1933-1934, I became convinced that he was going to stay and that the future for Jews in Germany was not good. I had no idea what would happen. I mean, Holocaust ideas never entered my mind. But from an economic or general freedom of being able to live there the way we wanted to live and the way we were accustomed to live, it's not possible.
Most important, at this particular time, when you were making that decision, how did the rest of the Jewish community relate to your feelings, for example? Could you sense what they were planning,
well,
if anything?
Let me put it this way to you. Many of the Jewish people, Germany, had possessions, houses, businesses, investments, which they at that time were unwilling to forfeit. My father's family had lost all its equities in the crash of 1927, which was the same thing as happened here in 1929. It happened 2 years earlier there. So that there was really nothing there from a material point of view to hold us. So in a way, it was easy for us to leave there because we were leaving nothing back.
Did your friends object to your going? How did your friends feel?
Our friends felt we were doing the same thing, only that they weren't willing to give up what they had.
So they thought it was all right for you, but they didn't want to do
it? No, they would have liked to have done it. If they could have taken their what they had with them, their material values with them, they would have gone too.
What could you explain? What kept you from taking anything material with you?
Didn't have anything.
No, I mean your friends. Let's say they did have something.
The German government wouldn't let them take it.
You mean you were not allowed to take anything out of the country? That's the point I want to know.
There was a minimum that could be taken out of
them. Yes. Only if you were Jewish,
Only if you were Jewish. Some people were able to take furniture out later on. But I'm talking about more than that.
Like sell real estate and take...
Real estate, stocks, values that have been inventory in businesses.
I'm glad we got that clear. So that makes the point. That's why there wasn't mass emigration.
But
right?
In addition to that... Immigration was restricted too.
Really?
Of course. Immigration to this country was restricted at the time.
You mean there were limits?
Surely there were quotas. Only so many Germans could enter this country. Mm-hmm. Now, not very many Germans wanted to come over. It was open. Jewish people could have come if they wanted to. They had to have... an affidavit from someone in this country that they would not become a burden to the state.
So those were the years you made the plans, and that was the very same year you left?
Really?
The year that you made the plans. 1934.
Were there regrets, Mr. Schwartz? What kinds of things did you most feel sorry about leaving behind?
Absolutely nothing.
No regrets?
None. As a matter of fact, and this is almost blasphemous to say, Hitler did me a favor.
But you were aware enough to have done something about it, is the way I see it. Of course, as you say, you were liquid. And that is something new to me, that what held a lot of people back was the fact that if they had a lead, they would be penniless.
That's correct. And very many people... And understandably, though, I'm not critical of this. Many people did not want to make that kind of a sacrifice.
Was it difficult for your uncle and your father, who were of a different generation? You were a young man. They were leaving the country that had really been theirs for all their lives.
Well, of course, it was much more difficult for them. Although my mother... was very happy to leave. She came home. My father was glad to leave because he knew it was better for me, and he knew that my mother would be very happy to come over here. My father made a very good adjustment. My uncle had been in this country for many years. He had worked in this country, and for him it was also an easy thing to do. But for many of my relatives who came over here later, for whom it was a very, very difficult thing, very difficult adjustment. It was a very great change.
Yeah, that's leaving your roots. And then you had to pick a city, evidently. Did you pick the city in advance?
No, that was done for me by my relatives here. They made arrangements for me to have a job in Pittsburgh. And in 1934, if you think back, you might remember that jobs were not plentiful by any means.
Okay. I see.
So I, when I came to Pittsburgh, I had a job at Gimbel's. And the reason I had a job at Gimbel's, because you remember I told you at the very beginning that a cousin of my parents lived in Pittsburgh, and his son-in-law, this cousin's son-in-law, happened to be president of Gimbel's at that time.
The cousin was Mr. Dreyfus.
It was Jack Blum. No.
No.
The cousin was Mr. Dreyfus, yes.
It was Mr. Dreyfus.
And his son-in-law
was, what was the son-in-law's name?
Jack Blum. J-A-C-Q-U-E-S. B-L-U-M.
Uh-huh. And he was at the time president of Gimbel's.
Yeah. His son lives in Pittsburgh. His son by the same name lives in Pittsburgh now.
Was Gimbel's then a chain?
Yes. It was always a chain.
Mm-hmm.
Gimbel's, I thought you knew this, originally was started in Pittsburgh by some of the Kaufmans, and it was called Kaufman and Bear.
I remember them.
The Kaufman and Bear used to be Gimbel's, and Gimbel's bought it.
I see. See what you learned?
And the Kaufman and Kaufman of Bear were one of the Kaufmans who couldn't get along with the guys who
ran the store. And I never knew that.
Question, did your parents come to Pittsburgh also? Or
my mother came, yes, surely. My mother came right away, and my father came a few months later. A
couple seconds.